Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first-time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host. Nothing brings her more energy and excitement than brainstorming ideas with others, Leanne Hughes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you develop and deliver workshops that kill. Now, I do that by interviewing amazing facilitators around the world on this weekly show, as well as from time to time running some solo episodes to share tips that I've picked up along the way. Now, I just can't believe that this is episode number 40. They all say that 40 is the new 30, but I'm happily sticking with 40 on this one. Now, if you want to continue your growth as a facilitator when the show is over, you can connect up with the Flipchart community on Facebook. Now, as I record this, we've had a few more people join the community. I'd like to welcome Catherine Lloyd, Adam Musto, Beck Caswell, Angela Henderson, Pete Finney, Sam Marie Esterhausen, and Runsley Vars. Now, it's cool meeting and greeting all of you on the flip chart and seeing where you're all from and what you actually facilitate. So we've got members from across Australia, Canada, the USA, Japan, and Thailand, which is super cool. Now on to today's guest, who I met in Brisbane a couple of months ago. So he flew up from Melbourne to attend the Institute for Learning Professionals Awards night. He was also a finalist for Learning Professional of the Year. So we were both finalists. Neither of us won that night, but look, I like to think that we both won because we met lots of amazing people at the awards night. And look, if it wasn't for the awards, I wouldn't have met Martin and wouldn't be able to share his story and learnings on the podcast today. Now, Martin Probst is an author, a career coach, a professional mentor, a chief education officer, CEO, and managing director of Profound Coaching. Now, look, with Martin, I guess, or when you're a finalist in any of these kind of awards categories, you kind of, I don't know, suss out the competition you're up against. And so from Martin's website, in my pre-work before the awards, I could tell he was really into helping out, helping people with leadership mindset and self-belief. But what I didn't know was that he also helps people destroy their phobias. And he has a really cool story he shares in this episode about how resetting your mindset and destroying blockages has also helped people physically. The work that he does is pretty incredible. And he's a fantastic communicator. So I hope you enjoy this one. Now, if you'd like to connect with Martin or check out any of the resources mentioned in this episode, you can do that by checking out the show notes page at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode40. Now, on to the show. I'd like to welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast, Martin Probst from Profound Leadership. Martin, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
I'd love to hear, we met recently in Brisbane, and I'll talk about the awards night later on in the conversation, but we met in Brisbane back in September. I'd like to know how you got your start in facilitation.
Well, that's actually quite a long story, but years back, and I think one thing leads to another, but years back I was actually a chef, and I started off doing some cooking demonstrations, actually even a few on national TV and Fresh and Postcards, and then I went into formal education, and formal education, as you know, it's more teaching and training, but ultimately facilitation really only came in when I started my own business about 7 years ago. So I quite often say I moved from consumption to creation. And I think there's really a big difference actually in there. So from the traditional knowledge-based teaching, in other words, you know, quite often we teach people what to think, where we often consume just a lot of knowledge and information, but we don't really know how to implement that in our real life. To then really facilitation, which I call the brain-based conversations, where you think or where you use more the assistance or help people to know how to think. And that really creates then independent learners who can actually create their own success.
That's right. So, wow, you're the first chef that we've had on the show that's transitioned through this career path. But actually, I've got a few people. I know a few people. Our head of HR at the business I work at, she's come from a hospitality type of background as well. So I think it develops some skills. Sean Lavin, who I had on the show in the past, he started in hotel and tourism. So I can understand that whole sort of customer service and being professional really helps in the role of facilitation. You talked about consumption to creation. When did you realise that you'd made that shift and labelled it that way? Is that something, a term that you've come up with yourself, or did you hear someone else say that, consumption to creation?
Yeah, no, really, I had a really eye-opener. I was working for quite a while in classroom environments, but then I moved into workplace training. And I really kind of thought, you know, a certain certificate or diploma levels, which I thought isn't really that challenging. People really struggled. And there were times where I just put the folder and everything aside and I said, what is this really all about? Do we need to have a chat? And we had these great conversations of facilitation style, a lot of questions. And I always get the same response. They said, I do want to do more of this. That is fantastic. Let's forget the paperwork. So I was a bit in a difficult situation where I said, well, you know, as more you can do on your own with completing assessments and paperwork, as more time we have to actually have a chat. And that took off, and that was actually my business model 7 years ago, to be honest, where I said there's a huge gap from teaching to facilitation, and the outcome, as I said, is completely different. So that's when I had this epiphany that we sometimes work too hard to just, you know, hammer people with information and knowledge, where I, you know, sometimes have a bit of a tough turn, but I think we're creating some technical idiots. Sorry, my French.
No, go for it.
But really, really giving people that thinking, that independent thinking, so they can really make smart decisions and even challenge certain things in life, I think that is very beneficial. And I believe we need that more and more.
I guess you were talking about diploma and certificate four type of levels. I've used to work at a TAFE in Western Australia as well, and I would often hear from a lot of the trainers there this the frustration that they had to teach to this thing and they weren't allowed to be that creative and sort of go off script. It was all about compliance and making sure you were hitting those targets, which really drove, I guess, for people that were creative and wanted to create that great environment, they really suffered from that.
Yeah, and look, don't get me wrong, we really need formal education. I'm actually still working in it more from the trainer perspective. Mm-hmm. And education, of course, realized that we need to have that independent thinking. But the question sometimes is, where do we learn that? Where do we perhaps give those tools to teachers and trainers in the classroom to really facilitate that change?
And it was actually quite brave of you as well, because you were in sort of stable employment with, you know, running these technical type of training, and then you decided, oh, I'm hearing a lot of people enjoy this thing. When did you actually decide to shift it and start Profound Leadership?
Yeah, that was in a very smart moment. My beautiful wife was actually just on maternity leave with our second child. And I had this crazy idea to start my own business, and people said, do you actually know what you're doing? And I said, yeah, sure. But looking back, I had actually no idea. But that was a good thing. Otherwise, I perhaps wouldn't have started. And in the same time, I'm really glad, because looking back, I would absolutely do it again without hesitation.
Oh, fantastic. That's really great news. But what was the, if you had to give yourself advice when you were starting your own business, what would that advice be?
Yeah, that's a very good question. That's I think there would be quite a lot, but I think one is really important. Talking about facilitation, you need to be an awesome facilitator and communicator. Actually, no matter what you do or what you offer, your success will come down to how you deal with people and how you facilitate your conversations with a clear outcome. And it doesn't really matter if it's networking, marketing, sales, customer relations, you name it. These are really important skills to have, because ultimately you will be the voice or the brand of your business. And I think especially when you start off, And one other thing that just comes to my mind is, I think when you start a business, you really need to have a clear vision and purpose. So I quite often refer to that you need to become the chief meaning officer. So my advice is, please start your business with the desire to make meaning as opposed to make money.
That's great.
Really making meaning. I really believe making meaning will help to change the world because we need to provide value. And I think you notice that if you happen to change the world, you will make money. But if you start off with the sole desire to make money, perhaps you won't make meaning and therefore you won't make or change the world. And ultimately, I don't think you're going to make money. So the money comes from providing meaning first. And I think we quite often get that wrong. And I see that with startups, they have that desire just to go in to make money. That's the byproduct of what you offer and what you do in business.
Yeah, that's great. And it sort of resonates. I listened to a guy. Do you listen to Pat Flynn at all? Smart Passive Income podcast?
No.
Yeah, he really talks about that. He really hones that in and he says it's all about providing service to your people. And then, as you said, the money is just a byproduct of that. So it's really switching that focus.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the role of Chief Meaning Officer, and I know that I love your job title. So Martin's job title is CEO, which is actually the Chief Education Officer. How did you come up with that? I love your job titles.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. Looking at business cards these days, I see so many different titles. Some are very serious. Some are really trying hard, I think, to come up with this huge kind of titles that make people feel good, in a sense. I am a CEO in a sense, but then at the same time, there's only me and my beautiful wife who work full-time in the business. And I thought, you know, why not having a bit fun and losing it up a bit? And as you said, I'm the Chief Education Officer and my beautiful wife is the Chief Efficiency Officer. So she is a CEO as well. And what she really does well is she is efficient and she certainly keeps me very busy, which I really appreciate. So it is a bit of an indicator of what we do. That's how we came up with it.
Yeah, it's very clever. There's probably another whole podcast episode on how you and your wife actually work together as well. I think I saw on some podcast group recently there was a podcast just about that, how couples can work together well. So
Yes. And that, again, that needs a lot of communication and talking about leadership. We do need to apply what we teach, that's for sure, to make it work. And we are together for almost 30 years, actually, next year.
Congratulations. And
we do still speak to each other, which is a great thing.
Yeah, you'd hope so.
Yes.
So you mentioned, you talked about facilitation earlier and how even if you're not really in the front of a room, it's actually a really important skill to have because you can use it in terms of networking and driving outcomes just in day-to-day, you know, living, let alone work. And you also mentioned that you run train the trainer sessions. So when you run those train the trainer sessions, what do you find that people are actually struggling with when it does come to facilitating?
I really think what they struggle with sometimes is the stress and the fear that they say something wrong, or I really believe they're making it about themselves quite often, which then really puts so much stress on us. I think a really good skill for facilitators is to understand that it's actually not about us, it's about our participants. And there are two mindsets. I really think there's a mindset which I quite often observed in the past, you know, when we grew up. It's that lecture mindset of you're just here because of me, so I can show you how good I am, versus a servant heart. Well, we say, you know what, it really is not about us, it's about you, and I'm just here to support you as much as I can. And knowing that it's not about us, personally for me, it's so important because the nerves actually and the stress disappears, where you can really then listen in what people say and furthermore what they don't say, where you pick up really important things and can follow up with great questions. So yes, you certainly as a facilitator, you do need to be a subject matter expert, but furthermore, you do have to have those communication skills, listening skills that really goes beyond what it said. Taking on feedback is certainly another thing which quite a few facilitators struggle these days. But I do believe that feedback is the breakfast for champions. So we do need to listen in. What's working? What's not working? How do we improve? And also to create that safe and supportive environment where we just really have an environment of meaningful conversation without fear, with no guilt, no blame, and no judgment. Mm. And I think that is really important, where people can open up, because I think we all do have some serious issues that we need to deal with, and therefore we do need to have some serious conversation. Always loosening up with a bit of fun as well, of course.
Oh, yeah. Love throwing a bit of fun in. That always...
Absolutely.
We're all humans.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned the mindset and how, like, it's really important. There are two mindsets. One is quite internal and the other is external. And we'd obviously like, as facilitators, to have the external mindset. But it is tricky when you are sort of learning a skill. How do you teach your students to switch their mindset? Is it just about, right, instead of focusing on how you're feeling, when you walk into the room, ask a question, listen in, be curious? Is it something as simple as that?
Yeah, I really think it starts off with controlling your mindset and your internal thoughts, you know, the voices that we have are inside of our heads, and I do hope you have them as well.
Of course.
And it's really a matter of which one do we listen to. Is it the ego? Is it the fear-driven response and, you know, who's sometimes challenging us and say, oh, what are you doing? Who do you think you are? Do you really believe you can be a good facilitator? And when something goes wrong, it says, oh, you see, I told you so. Or do we go more into the heart space, as I said, that servant heart, where we say, I just do the best I can and I will ask questions. One big thing that comes to my mind is you almost need to feel comfortable to feel uncomfortable, or to mm-hmm. really ask those important questions that perhaps nobody else asks or dares to ask.
Mm.
So playing it safe doesn't work with facilitation. You really need to be able to think on your feet and come up very quickly with question, engagement, entertaining, empowering, educational. So there's a lot of ease in there, I just realized.
Yeah, you've just created a new model.
I think we're just creating a new model here. But really, there's so many aspects. I think the important thing is, let's just take one step at a time and be willing to have a crack at it, be willing to fail fast, but learn from the mistake and just do better mistakes the next time.
Yeah.
That's how I started off.
Yeah, that's how I've started off as well. Actually, I do have a question here. I haven't asked this question in quite a while, but I'd love to throw it to you, because we're on the topic of failing fast. Has there been a time where things haven't gone so well in your training environment, and what did you learn from that experience?
Okay, where should I start? Now, looking back, especially in the beginning, what I was taught is do as many presentations, as many facilitations as you can. Really practice, go out there. I've done workshops for Rotary, for Lion, for so many different groups. Sometimes you get 15 minutes, sometimes you get 20 minutes. And some of them were really horribly wrong. And I think on the way home, I thought, oh my God, is that really for me? Or should I just stop and go back to that safe employment? Luckily, I pushed through, which is really important mindset as well. But what did I learn? I think, to be more specific, one training session that I had, which didn't really go that well, was one where the HR manager was very adamant of what needs to be taught very specifically, and she kind of presumed to know what the problem is. And unfortunately, I bought into that and did exactly what they told me, and I think I didn't listen to myself there. So what I've learned is, if a business really knows what the problem is, they would have probably already solved the problem themselves, right?
Mm.
And I think that is a big learning. Quite often people believe they know what the problem is, but it's actually not. It's quite often a different story. It's deeper, but we make up smaller problems, so we don't have to deal with the big problems. So PowerPoint is another thing. I believe we need to move away from death by PowerPoint. I just spoke at a national conference and my wife was there as well. And I actually had to say, you could clearly see the background of people. Some people had so much, it was like a textbook, whereas other people just had a beautiful picture, maybe a powerful comment, and that's it. So that's a learning as well from me. And I quite often think, as more we put on PowerPoints, as more we are scared not to know our content, as more we hold on to what we prepared, as less we can actually listen to what people say in the room. And that's where it usually goes wrong. So let's just go in with an open mind, be able to listen, never assume to know the problem or the solution before you talk to your participants or your audience. I quite often, what I learned as well is I set up an agreement frame, as I call it, with the organizer and the audience on the day, when I say, look, we do know what we're looking for as an outcome. We have to start with the end in mind, but can we be flexible on how do we get there? Is it okay if we deviate a bit from what was planned, as long as I provide solutions to real problems? And when participants and the workplace agrees on it, that also gives you really flexibility to facilitate. And that's where the change really happens.
Great. And you sort of get a bit of trust from them as well, saying, look, I will get you, we'll drive to this outcome, but please trust that the methods that I use will enable that. I like that you, it's all about really coming in with that curiosity that you mentioned.
And curiosity is so important. And I think when we were a child, we had all that curiosity, you know, when we nagging our parents and our friends and our teachers, and we ask all this question, why is that? Why? I think we need to get that back because that really gives us an insight of people's mindset, where they are in life, what problems they face, their values, beliefs, past experiences, their needs, their wants, their desires, and all those kind of things are really revealed. And as more we know about the other person or the people in the room, as more we can really assist them with the outcome.
Yeah. And that, I mean, having that curiosity naturally just shifts those two mindsets you were also talking about. The second that you come in with curiosity as opposed to, oh, it's all about me, you're halfway on, you know, you're already winning. Your focus has already shifted. So that's great.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we talked about a time that things didn't go so well. I'd love to hear about kind of any transformations that you've experienced after workshops or facilitated environments that you've run. Have you heard had any great feedback, or have people sort of changed their lives or made tiny shifts following one of your sessions?
Yeah, look, the shifts I see are just phenomenal, and that's why I really love and I'm so passionate about what I'm doing. The transformation, and I have actually a lot of testimonials up on my website to see, but we need to understand that change can happen in an instant. And I actually often say change doesn't happen by chance, it happens by choice. And working with people, being able there to listen to really what they say, asking questions with curiosity, and going to places where other people are maybe a bit afraid of, because there can be awkward situations. There can be sometimes emotions involved, especially when we're doing emotion intelligence, as an example. We need to demonstrate how powerful that can be. But from the testimonial, when what people say, I saw breakthroughs, people having found total clarity of who they are, who they want to be, you know, letting go of all those social obligations and trying to pretend to be somebody else or pleasing other people, where I quite often say, just be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. And I really love that, because it's we are unique and we should really embrace that. I've heard and seen testimonials and change where people really can get rid of, you know, a lot of baggage from the past. We do have certain areas in our life where we don't feel so empowered, or where we feel a bit kind of guilt or shame or certain things that we hold on. And sometimes that prevents us from moving forward. So I saw people taking tremendous actions after some of those facilitations. They go out there, they're really smashing it, they feel more confident, they have stronger relationships. One guy actually talked about it, and there's a video on the website as well. He actually said that he had some side effects after my session. And I said, oh, wow, okay, tell me more. And he said, did I tell you that I was asthmatic? And I said, well, what do you mean by you were? And he said, yeah, that's exactly right. I said, remember how we talked about that thing from the past, which I described like having a millstone on my chest and my lungs? And I said, yes. He said, since we removed this thing, I don't use my puffers or anything. I didn't even thought about it. So there's
what?
Even health.
That's crazy.
There's even health things. I mean, I'm not a doctor, and we have to be very clear. We can't make those claims in a sense, but he talks about it. And we need to ask sometimes if that's just a coincidence or does it actually have to do something with the mindset and how we look at things. But I do even some phobia busts, which is phenomenal. To see people who were scared and had those fears of flying and spiders and birds and all those things, and really kind of by challenging them and changing their mindset where they can just go out and feel or live a much more fulfilled life. So there's so many different benefits and transformations, and I really feel blessed to be able to assist people in making those changes.
Oh, that's incredible. I actually had no idea that you did the phobia busting sort of stuff, but I did read, I was on your LinkedIn page and I read that this testimonial which said, it's extraordinary that Martin can deliver such powerful mindset change in such a short period of time. In just one short session, I was able to reset my thinking around conflict, participation and resolution. So how do you think that you do that? What are some tools or methods, or is it, I don't know, you can't, none of the listeners can see Martin, but I met him in Brisbane and he's quite tall. Is it?
He's a gentle giant.
He's a gentle giant.
That's maybe one of my secrets.
Maybe a future role title. But yeah, what do you think it is that, what do you do? What do you bring that can have such a positive change and side effects in people that you work with?
I really believe that I invested a lot of time in the most important real estate that you can have, which is the one between your ears. And for me, especially in leadership, which is all about the human aspect, understanding human behaviors and working with numerous personal transformation modalities. But I have a master in neuro-linguistic programming, actually hypnotherapy. I'm also a certified business and relationship coach and advanced practitioner of life coaching, and it goes on and on. But it's not really about that, but really having a lot of different tools on your tool belt where you can go in and facilitate and say, you know what, if one tool doesn't work, I can just pull another one out and one or the other one will stick and we can make that transformation. That is certainly one of the reasons, I think, why the facilitations are so powerful. The other thing is really that linguistic part where we have to listen in. We quite often, again, we talk about problems that are no problems. I just worked with a CEO, just to give you an example. I worked with a CEO and said, I said, what are we going to talk about today? What would you like to get as an outcome? And he said, I need to get in the good books with my wife. I said, so what's happened? He said, I'm in the doghouse. I said, why? He said, what's the problem? He said, well, you know, we bought this house 6 months ago and the window frames are a bit mush and they need to be changed and I still haven't done it, so my wife lost it. So he identified the problem and I said to him, I said, so what's the problem? And he looked at me like, are you not listening? I just told you. I didn't say it, but, you know, the facial expression gave it away. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you haven't really told me the problem. He said, no, I did. I said, no, that's not the problem. So I asked a few more questions. And within about 5 minutes or even less, we identified the real problem, which was his wife wanted to have a baby. He didn't.
Wow.
So I just bring that up. It was just a recent conversation. And this is where we quite often, we spend so much time solving problems that not really are the problems. So quite often, I think we need to go a bit deeper. We need to challenge people. And I said to him, I said, now we have a serious conversation. Now we can look at solutions and how we're dealing with that issue. But everything else beforehand would actually have been almost a waste of time. Mm. So really not buying into those stories, into the drama that we tell ourselves, where the ego kicks in, you know, the ego that just wants to be right, justify things, get even, look good. They are not good motivation, especially not in conflicts. So I think what we need to help people as well is getting out of their heads and getting more into the heart space.
Yeah.
Also a really important part. And also feeling comfortable to feel uncomfortable and ask those uncomfortable questions, because that's where the learnings are.
Yeah, there's been some times where I run workshops and you talked about that tiny voice in your head, and sometimes it comes in and it's like, should I ask that question? And I do back myself and ask it, and it's always worth it. So I'm lucky that I can trust that.
Leanne, you see, that is just a beautiful example of the two mindsets. Because if we wouldn't ask that question, we would actually make it about ourselves, not feeling uncomfortable. So we're playing it safe because we kind of don't trust ourselves.
Mm.
Versus, no, I actually ask that question. I ask it because it's important, because I'm here to serve you. And I think it has to be asked. And as long people understand your motivation, where you're really upfront, where you say, you know what, is it okay to ask those questions? And we find solutions. And we make sure that at the end of this session of facilitation, you feel absolutely clarity and understand what's really going on. That's where people really build trust, and where you have a connection to create those transformations.
Do you, with those questions that you have, do you, and this probably, I don't know, you don't have like a database in your head of questions. It's more about you feel what's happening in the conversation, you're really listening, and then you ask the right question that's going to go deeper or challenge that person or snap them out of the mindset that they're in?
Yeah, look, that is really the combination of having a lot of metaphors, having a lot of methodologies and structures in all these different learnings that I had over the years. And let's be honest, the most things that I've learned is actually from my clients. Because after a while, when you're doing things, you start to realize those human patterns, where you think, oh my God, I've seen the same thing. The story was completely different, but it's the same principle. And that's where you can really transform things within minutes. And you go, you know, talking about questions where you can ask those laser questions, because you know exactly what this is all about. That creates a transformation or the mindset shift.
Yeah, it's all about that experience, isn't it? And obviously all that professional development has helped along the way, but it's a combination of that and everything, every client that you've worked with in the past, every conversation that you've had has
absolutely
led you there. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm surprised, like I'm seeing in a few years you on stage with Tony Robbins, Martin.
Are you?
Yes.
I love your vision.
I think we need to get, Martin, you need to get out there.
Yeah, I actually do quite a few national conferences. A couple of weeks back had one at the Melbourne Exhibition and Convention Centre with about 450, 500 people in there. So it is really a humbled experience of being able to influence quite a lot of people these days and really make that difference. That's our slogan anyway, there to make a difference, you know, that's how we create meaning, challenging the status quo and being curious.
Fantastic. And after you've run workshops or done something on stage, I mean, sometimes it's difficult to, especially in those conferences where there's huge groups of people, you don't really have direct contact with them following a workshop or a speech, but what are some ways that we can help our participants embed the learnings that we've given, that we've imparted on them? How can they then take them away and make that shift?
Embedding learning, I think there's three stages to it. I call them learn, implement, teach. And let me explain that perhaps a bit. So the learning really happens through the facilitation which we do, where people, you know, have a good understanding of knowledge, And, you know, there's that saying, knowledge is power, which I actually disagree a bit, because knowledge is not power unless you actually implement, which is the next step. And unfortunately, we do have quite a lot of people. I call them the information gatherers. And we have so many degrees and certificates and diplomas, and sometimes I'm wondering, what are we doing with it? What's the purpose of doing another course? And it's great, of course, you know, as I said, we need to invest into our professional development, but we need to do something. So implementation is a really important part. That's where the ripple starts to happen. That's where we see the change. And once you implement things, when you then teach, when you actually facilitate, when you share your knowledge with other people, which requires you to be able to language your learnings, to translate that in your own words and teach other people, I think that's when your learning is embedded for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You will always be able to access that information.
I like that. Learn, implement, and teach. It's the lit up method.
Oh, I love it. Another
there we go.
Methodology. Gee, that is a very, very beneficial talk.
Yeah, you've gained something from this too. So that's great. So what is your advice to people that are listening in that are transitioning from subject matter expert, where they do have all the knowledge and they're comfortable having all the knowledge, but they're not comfortable in sharing that with others? What advice would you give someone starting out?
Yeah, look, coming back to my previous comment almost, really have a crack at it. Have a crack at it. Ask yourself, what can you do today to start off, to really go out there? What I've actually learned is when I started, I spoke about starting my own business for years and years. And it's almost like my first book I published, I spoke about it and didn't really do anything. And thanks God, my friend started to tease me a bit and said, "Hey, Martin, how's your book going?" And I was like, yeah, I'm getting there, you know, I really need to write this book. And I thought, you're a hypocrite, you even haven't talked about a title or a content at all. You haven't even started. And I realized there was a lot of excuses of, you know, not enough support, not enough time, not enough finance, not enough knowledge, not enough this. So the focus was all the limitations, to a point where I said, you know what, those excuses, they just don't work for me anymore. What I need is results. And I realized that we have to make a decision. Do we want to have excuses or results? And fortunately, we can't have both. So we need to make a decision. And to me, that was actually a game changer. When I said enough is enough, I need to stop excuses and I want to have results, that's where things started to happen. And actually, by now, I published 6 books and a lot of resources and stuff. And it's amazing what is possible. So what the learning or what advice I would give is really ask yourself, what can I do today, even if it's just one single task, to move forward, but get started. Don't delay anything. It's the best time is right now.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I did my first Facebook Live the other week, which was scary, but that was one small step of making progress. And in that, I spoke about how it's so important just to take action. And you can think about things all the time in your head, but if you just give it a go, you build momentum, you quickly figure out what went wrong or what's going right. And taking action, I 100% agree with. And I like that you can start today. You don't have to wait.
That's a good thing. I really say often that there is absolutely no substitute for taking action. And that's a good thing, because we actually should be on a mission to achieve our purpose and vision. Because if that purpose and vision is big enough, that will give us the motivation to find ways to move forward and really take action. We just need to see the value. And coming back to the chief meaning officer, we really truly need to understand what the business is all about and what do we want to achieve, what is the outcome we want to achieve through facilitation.
Oh, Martin, that's fantastic. And this has been a very inspiring and motivational call, I think, not only for me, but for our listeners too. And we've loved hearing your stories and your metaphors and your models. They've been really useful too. And even just coming back to the whole two mindsets, I think that's probably a really key thing for our audience who are listening in, possibly because they want to get better at facilitating, and just remembering that you're there in service of the people in your room and to drive a really great outcome. So, Martin, if any of our listeners want to get in contact with you and find, you know, look at your books, find your resources, watch some of your videos, where can they find you?
Yeah, cool. That's great. Actually, there's always the website, of course, which is profoundleadership.com.au. And if you were a bit inspired or want to connect with me, LinkedIn is one of my favorite social media platforms, which you would just find me under Martin Probst. And we also around with YouTube channels for videos. There's quite a lot. The Google Plus, Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, Twitter, you name it, we actually are there. And I'm sure you will find us. Would love to hear from you, the feedback and what you've learned. And of course, most importantly, the success you achieve through listening into Leanne's podcast, which I really think you're doing a terrific job.
Oh, thank you. And we'll link to all of Martin's social media. It'll probably be scrolling down a bit because you've got a lot of different mediums on the show notes page for this episode. But Martin, it's been fantastic having you on the show. It was great meeting you a couple of months ago at the Institute for Learning Professionals Awards.
And congratulations to you.
Congratulations to you. We were taking a lot of photos. You. We were probably the two most excited people there.
Absolutely. That was a big party.
It was. Thanks so much, Martin, and I'm very grateful for your time today.
Thank you very much, Leanne, and everybody who's listening in. You have a wonderful day.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of First Time Facilitator. Make it easy for yourself and don't worry about having to find First Time Facilitator episodes ever again. If you just click that subscribe button in your podcast player of choice, that makes it really easy for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can either DM me on Instagram at First Time Facilitator, tweet me at Leanne Hughes, link up with me on LinkedIn. You can just search for Leanne Hughes or join the Facebook group, The Flip Chart, and stay engaged with fellow listeners. Chat to you next week.